Hi, this is Chris, host of A Couple of Drips. Just before we start, I wanted to say a quick word about our subscribers' memberships. If you'd like to help support future episodes, you can subscribe to the show for a few pounds a month. This'll help fund production, coffee, and guest expenses. Simply click on the support button in the episode description. Cheers, and enjoy the show.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Grab a cup, settle in, and turn it up. It's time for A Couple of Drips Mental Health Special. Please welcome your host, bringing the issues to the table and hoping to perk you up, it's Chris Granger.
Hello, and welcome to the first of a very special episode of A Couple of Drips. In these episodes, we hope to take a look into some of the issues surrounding mental health, while sharing experiences, comfort and advice, and maybe having a laugh or two along the way, and certainly having a coffee or two. Unusually for these episodes, we've got Doppio with our guest doubling to four people. I've had to buy more microphones. And today we'll run slightly differently in that each person will introduce themselves and get a chance to talk. But then we'll throw the topics open to the floor. Please will you join me in welcoming my guests, Michael Hayes, Lee Smith and Martin Davis.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
How are you all?
Not bad.
Excellent. So I'll get you to introduce yourselves individually. I think we'll go around the table clockwise. So I'll start off with you, Lee. Tell us who you are, where you're from, and what you do.
So my name's Lee Smith. I'm from Weston-super-Mare in Sunny Somerset, and I currently work as a senior software analyst for an IT company.
Very nice. Thank you very much, Michael.
Hello, my name's Mick. I live in Stoke-on-Trent, and amongst other things, I'm a freelance graphic designer.
Fantastic. And Martin?
Hello, yeah, my name's Martin Davis. I'm a probation service officer working for the National Probation Service here in Stoke-on-Trent.
Very nice indeed. Okay, well, we've got the coffee here, so I think before the coffee goes cold, let's do coffee time.
All together now. One, two, three.
I haven't wasted my lockdown. Brilliant. So, what are we drinking today, Lee?
So today we're drinking packed coffee San Joaquin Petite with hints of dark chocolate and black cherry.
Very nice. Let's have a try. What do we think? I definitely get the black cherry. You get the black cherry?
It's quite fruity.
It is quite fruity.
I'm liking the smooth out on the top. It's
very nice. Smooth. Lee, as a tea drinker, realizing now then. I may have made a massive mistake, but as a tea drinker, how do you find it?
Bearable.
Bearable.
Yes, I'm not a fan of the taste of coffee. I like the smell, and that's as far as it goes, but it's drinkable.
I see. Michael, would you purchase this?
Yeah, I'd probably buy this. It's a nice smooth cup of coffee.
It's lovely, isn't it?
I'm enjoying that.
And Martin, as a decaf drinker, how are you finding it?
How dare you?
You'll be buzzing off the ceiling. How are you finding it?
Well, actually, I'm quite surprised. It's fairly smooth. I know we're having it black here at the moment. Normally, I would take it white. Yeah. But, I could acquire to this taste quite easily.
Very nice. Very nice. Lovely. Okay, so well, let's start the ball rolling for today's topic. There's no easy way into this kind of thing. It's a difficult topic, but we decided to do a mental health special, which was a suggestion from Mick. I was planning a normal episode with Mick. A normal episode, as if there's such a thing as a normal episode. But I was planning a regular episode with Mick, and Mick said, could we talk about mental health? What was your motivation for that, Mick?
I don't know, really. I suppose it's just it's had a... such a profound effect on my life thus far. It just, if I was going to speak about myself during an episode, it just seemed a logical thing to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think that kind of lockdown has had an impact on that?
Yeah, in both directions, unusually. I think parts of lockdown have had a positive effect on my mental health, and other parts of lockdown have had a negative effect on my mental health. So it's difficult. There's a balance to be struck somewhere, and I'm not quite there at the moment.
I mean, what are you guys' experiences of that through lockdown? Has it helped or hindered your mental health, do you think?
Well, from a personal perspective, I think it's helped.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we obviously, a lot of people went through some difficult times, but I just enjoyed the fact that everything sort of slowed down.
Yeah, I liked that.
We got time to actually spend time with each other. And enjoy and actually understand how important communicating with other people was.
Yeah, I loved looking out the window and not seeing any cars or vehicles and stuff. Yeah, I quite like in a sort of Amiga Man post-apocalyptic kind of way, you know, and kind of like, where have all the people gone? Because I can be, you know, for all the confidence of doing this, I can be quite shy. I used to struggle to walk into a shop and, you know, had definite self-confidence issues. And to sort of not have to face people, it was, because I'm a little bit agoraphobic as well, that was quite, in a way, it was good for me because I didn't have to bump into people and I could kind of be isolated but be out in the world now and again. But in another way, it was bad because it kind of fed into my worst possible kind of paranoias of like, oh, I can be away from people. And then when people did approach... And also the fact that they may have this virus that could kill you as well. So people were, from people being a kind of self-conscious threat, people actually became a real threat.
Yeah.
You know, that didn't sit well with me. I mean, you mentioned, Mick, if I can pick up on it, about, you know, having had mental health issues, and not just in lockdown but before. What kind of coping mechanisms have you used throughout the years?
Name it, basically. I mean, when I was when I first started having mental health issues in my sort of mid to late teens, I started taking drugs, started smoking. Later on in my sort of mid to late 20s, I had quite a bad drinking problem for a few years as well.
It's a crutch, isn't it?
Definitely. And currently, for the past few years, it's definitely been food, which is shockingly as much of, if not more damaging than the aforementioned coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
It's definitely had quite a profound effect on me, but there's...
I mean, I can identify with that comfort eating.
Absolutely.
You know, kind of like, what do you fill the void with? Oh, I fill the void with pizza,
And I mean, you know me, and you know probably my least damaging coping mechanism is wasting money on old shit.
Yeah.
Because I buy lots of old electronics and games consoles.
Yeah, we'll be doing an episode with Mick. We've been planning an episode for quite a while with Mick, but unfortunately, he had a very nasty accident and damaged his intercostal muscles before Christmas. And so we had to cancel the recording of that. But we will be doing a special with Mick talking about collecting vintage electrical equipment. I won't go into too much detail.
I mean, it's a hobby, but it's definitely also a coping mechanism, because there are times when I will buy something to do with my hobby that I absolutely cannot afford and that I should not be buying.
Yeah.
And that's definitely part of...
You've got to go food shopping, but you'll spend 100 quid on some second-hand piece of equipment. Yeah. I think I'm guilty of that as well with buying electronic studio gear. You know, buy old stuff, I buy new stuff kind of thing. It's the same thing. I don't really need that. I don't really need this, you know. Had to buy some extra microphones for doing a four-person podcast, but that was needed. So I think we're all guilty of that. But the comfort eating thing is very difficult because I comfort eat when I need cheering up, but I also eat when I'm happy as well.
Yeah.
And so that can be a big problem. I think we've had this discussion before, Mick, that a lot of the times late at night, I think I'm hungry and I'm actually thirsty and I'll go and grab something to it. And I'm not actually, I'm thirsty. And if I just drank a pint of water, I wouldn't want to eat that thing. You know,
yeah, I think I've had exactly the same discussion with Lee before, actually. Yeah. A lot of the time I will do something ludicrous like order a massive pizza at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And then I'll finish the pizza off and sit there and think, actually, all I really wanted is a glass of juice.
Yeah.
Like that would have been perfectly adequate. But no.
It's bad, isn't it?
Sorry, I think a lot of the time boredom plays into it as well.
Yes.
You know, sometimes you just don't know what you want or what you want to do. And I think you take a look at the convenience apps that we've got that have really exploded massively during lockdown, the likes of Uber, the likes of Just Eat, the fact that if you want a particular type of food, you can get it to your door, and the minimal effort you have to put in is nothing.
Mate, I wish I could get the statistic for how many times during the last 2 years I've deleted and reinstalled Just Eat. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. I've recently discovered that there's a rather nice Bulti House in Stafford. I'll give them a shout out, might get a free meal. Bulti Palace in Stafford. and they're on Just Eat and they deliver to here. And that's dangerous. I've ordered about 3 times in 2 weeks. So, yeah, it is bad. What about you, Martin?
Well,
you lanky boy.
Well, to be honest, I mean, I do work with a lot of people that have a lot of problems. So I do understand a lot about maladaptive coping mechanisms. And so I've always tried to avoid it, but I can't avoid that box of chocolates, like you say, that box of Maltesers is my weakness.
Absolutely.
I cannot go to sleep.
You can't just have one. You've got to...
How can you eat a whole box? I can't go to sleep until that box is empty.
Yeah.
There's something playing.
I'm the same. I'll
brain.
Buy like a 400-gram chocolate bar and I'll just have a strip. I'll just have a strip and I'll put it away. And I might manage it for a day. And then the next day I'll have another strip and I might manage it for 2 days. Day three, the rest of the bar is going in one session because...
You know, there's a way that someone will behave that your brain just can't process properly. Like, you can't understand or reconcile why they behave like that.
Yeah.
That's me and people that can only have one biscuit out of a packet.
Yeah.
Like, if I open a packet of biscuits, I am consuming a packet of biscuits.
Yeah.
I think the worst thing with food, I don't know if you experience this or not, Mick, is that you know you're making a conscious decision to eat. And I suffer with this terribly, is that I will have a really good day. As you know, I've worked really hard to get on top of my weight, and I'll have a really good day. And then it'll get to late at night, and partner and kids have gone to bed, and I might have something on the TV, might be playing a game, might be reading. And then there's something inside me that just clicks. It's like, do you know what would be really nice now? A snack.
Yeah.
But then you go and look for a snack, and then you can't find what you want. And then 5 minutes later, you've ordered
a kebab.
Something.
Yeah.
It's not. But the thing is that it's not just ordering one thing, because you look at it and go, oh, well, that's £7 for that item, but you need to order £15 before they'll deliver.
Oh, yeah.
So then you end up adding more on, right? And then before you know it, you spent £20, you know, because delivery charges.
Yeah.
Right. So you've spent £20 for no reason, and you're going to consume an entire meal, which is probably more calories than you've eaten the entire day.
Yep.
And you don't feel bad about it until after you've taken that last mouthful.
Yeah.
And when you're actually eating, you feel like you're just going through the motions.
After the first few mouthfuls, it's kind of not satisfying anymore anyway. But there's this thing that comes from my gran, which was, you must clear your plate or you must finish your thing. And I have this thing, if I don't finish the food, it'll either go off or someone else will eat it. And so if I eat that chocolate bar now, then no one else has had it, you know. Yeah. And that is a terrible thing because, number one, I live on my own. Who's going to steal it? And I don't have a number two.
I think mine is also a grandparent thing because, as you know, Chris, I was brought up by my grandparents.
Absolutely.
Who both live through the war and and rationing.
Yeah.
And there was this massive emphasis on you need to clear your plate. You mustn't leave food. You must never leave food.
Yeah.
And that's definitely followed me into adult life.
I thought the Luftwaffe had had bigger portions than
not those grandparents.
Oh, sorry, Mick has Austrian relatives for anyone listening.
But no, it's definitely, I mean, just the other day I went out for a meal, I took my mother out for a meal. She only ate about half of her food. I finished mine and I just cleared the rest of her plate.
Yeah.
I could not stand
it's this ultimate fear waste. Of waste, isn't it? And it comes from my gran. And I don't know how this was a threat. I have no idea how this was a threat. But she would say, if you don't eat it now, you'll have it for leftovers tomorrow. Well, I love leftovers now. How was that ever a threat?
Yeah.
There's nothing better than yesterday's pizza. Or, you know, a bit of, like, for my lunch yesterday was a bit of cold curry from the night before, with a bit of coconut rice.
I can't recall the last time I had leftovers.
No, well, that's the problem, isn't it?
It is. That's exactly the problem.
I'm trying to be on a diet at the moment, and so I actually forced myself to leave a bit of the curry the night before. But yeah, it's a long, slow process.
I mean, of course, what I'm sure everyone realises anyway is that what all this ties into is that we're chasing short highs.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of mental health seems to go in the same sort of way as drug addiction, in that you're chasing a short high.
Yeah.
To make yourself feel better, and that's what it's all about. That's what a lot of the eating's about. That's what a lot of me buying things I shouldn't buy are about. Yeah. You know, I want that little short high, like Christmas Day when the parcel comes through my door and I get to open it up and take all the packaging out and look at this new thing that I've bought. And it is just it's just chasing those tiny little happy moments. You know?
I mean, we even had to start the recording again because I had an Amazon delivery. So typical. I think it is difficult and kind of, you know, you mentioned self-care earlier. I mean, how do you deal with that? What are the steps that you take to sort of overcome that?
I mean, it's difficult because I've got to be so conscious of everything. I'm constantly second guessing myself. I mean, even if I've got plenty of money during a certain month and I want to order something that isn't frivolous whatsoever at all, you know, it will go in my Amazon basket for a week
and I'll
even flip through the checkout process and then go back and leave it again because I'm constantly second guessing myself. Do I need that? Do I need that? Or am I just ordering this because I'm feeling shit, you know?
I think a lot of my record collection is possibly down to that. You know, I love collecting records and stuff, but also it's self-medication to some extent.
I apologise profusely for constantly sending you links to records to buy.
Please do keep sending them. Very much appreciated. Yeah, but you did also recently give me a copy of Muppet's Christmas Carol, for which I'm very grateful, because you had two copies of it as well.
So I did. Lovely Zavi sent me two copies. So
thank you, Zavi. I don't think they'll be sponsoring us. Okay, so Lee, I'll move on to you for a little while. Tell us a little bit about your work. Is quite proactive with mental health, isn't it?
Yeah, so I work for a company called Civica. Shout out to Civica. Again, not sponsoring this recording. and my job role is yet. That's right, yet. So my job is a senior software analyst, and my business unit specializes in private health and care. And I get a lot of satisfaction from the work that I do as my proper job, the job that I'm employed to do, because I get to see that by maintaining the systems, people receive a direct level of care. And I can see the importance in that. So I'm really happy. I really enjoyed my job. And then a few years ago, I think it was 2019, tail end of 2018, beginning of 2019, the company decided they were going to start a mental health initiative. So we already had things in the company like an employee assistance program where the company offers support and help to look after you. But there wasn't really anyone championing that program. So they wanted to get a few colleagues across the UK business skilled up as mental health champions or mental health first aiders. So they sent us on a course to become mental health first aid accredited, and it really just took off from there. What initially was put in place for us was that we would be a go-to person if someone's having a crisis. We would wait for people to approach us and have a talk, and we were there to be, you know, we're there to listen and we're there to signpost people. But it started developing more from that, especially during lockdown, whereby that we became as a team more proactive and we started reaching out to people. We started putting together things like emails and little newsletters. We started doing video recordings and presentations, and really made our company or made other people within our company aware that if they need help, we're here. I love that. I absolutely love that.
Yeah, you've really kind of taken to that role, haven't you?
Yeah, I think one of the most recent presentations that we did was when we did an onboarding process for our graduates. So the company has something set up in place that all of the graduates go through, but the team that does the onboarding asked the mental health team to put together an awareness session. So we got them for 2 hours in an office, and me and another colleague explained, you know, who we are, what we stand for, what we offer, how to get in contact with us, what things you can talk about us with, how we'll listen, what support is available. I think one of the best things about it is that we act completely outside the reins of the normal channels within a business. So we don't report to other people's team leaders or line managers. Yep. We don't feed into HR. We're completely separate from that.
HR aren't wanting an occupational health report from you when you talk to people.
Exactly. So people know that they can approach us with anything, and it's completely anonymous. And all we have to do is be available to listen. And for any of you guys that have ever spoken about anything that's on your mind before, and I know that us being blokes is difficult to talk, but we provide such a valuable service just by being there. And during lockdown itself, especially, I would say, come the end of March, beginning of April, so right at the beginning of lockdown 2020, when people are navigating all these problems, if you remember, people were having trouble getting shopping, people were having issues with should they go out the house for a walk or not, you know, should they try driving to multiple shops to try and find things that they need, you know, just generic stuff like that, and then trying to juggle work inside that time as well. And if you remember, supermarkets were on restricted hours. I recall on one occasion I drove to Sainsbury's because the local supermarkets and Morrison's and Asda and Tesco's I had already tried were out of something, and I was standing in a queue, you know, socially distanced.
Wasn't toilet rolls, was
that was part of the shopping list, and I had to call my manager and I said, look, you know, I've been in this queue for an hour, I've still not reached the front door.
Wow.
I need to go and get shopping.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we got nothing in. And it was, I think it was then he replied, you know, it's fine, take your time. Everyone's suffering.
That's
at the moment.
Really good.
Yeah. And
that's the kind of line manager boss you need, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah. You don't want someone going, oh, you know, I'm going to be counting every minute, and if you take too long, then you need to stay on at the end of the day. And it was none of that.
I think we've all had bosses like that.
Yeah, we have in the past, but.
So how does the mental health support work through lockdown? Because obviously you're working from home more now. Mm-hmm. If another member of the team wants to contact you, is it instituted through email? Is it done through Teams calls?
Yeah, exactly that. So I, in the past, when we were in the office, people would catch me in the kitchen, drop a note at my desk, you know, bump into you. That's how it works. But through lockdown, people would drop me through messages through things like Skype or Teams, or they'd send me an email, and we would set up a call from there. A lot of people were very conscious of their privacy, and they wouldn't want to discuss anything in a written format. So it would be a case of, I want to have a talk about something. Can you put something on a calendar for a call? And we would use our own devices to do a one-off phone call, withholding numbers, you know, for security, but just so we can have those conversations with people.
Excellent. So, Martin, you deal with mental health at work, don't you? I mean, we won't go into too many specifics of your job, but, I mean, what kind of things come down, and has it changed over lockdown at all?
I mean, I do deal with a lot of difficulties with mental health in my professional. But in my personal life as well, I've dealt with a lot of mental health issues. I think I've dealt with them all my life. Always been on a sort of journey of self-discovery, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I think I've come through it in lots of ways, in a positive way, and I've always looked for positive outlooks. So, I mean, on a personal basis, like I say, lockdown wasn't too bad for me, but I did go through quite a difficult time in other areas with work as well, and I've always looked for good outlays for that.
Yeah.
And one of the things I came across, as you know, Chris, I've always been involved in music.
Yeah.
I mean, we met.
We met through
live music. You invited me to do something with a busking competition. Yeah. And that's how we sort of got together, got to know each other. So I've always been interested in music, and I've always been interested in singing, but choirs haven't got the best voice for be a singer. But you can always hide away in a choir, so I thought that's the best place to be.
Yeah, that's nice.
And so I have been involved in lots of choirs because I was going through a difficult time, right about 2018, 2019. One of my neighbours sort of noticed, you know, I could do with a bit of support, and he invited me to come along to what's called the Upman Sing Choir, which is basically a group of men trying to support each other through mental health. But it was a lot more than that, because it was actually a guy called Paul Rogerson developed that from the legacy of what's called Restoke, which was called a man-up project, which was really interesting because he had this idea. Obviously, he could see there was a lot of problems with mental health in men. He just threw a lot of emails and applications through social media out there, trying to get some, see what interest you'd get, and put on this these performances through Restoke. This was back, like I say, five odd years ago. And then the Man Up Choir was a legacy that grew out of that. Now, I wasn't around, obviously, at that time, but quite early on with the Up Man Sing. And this was a completely different experience. All Ukrainian and Georgian and other Eastern European Brilliant. Songs. And it's all about the polyphonic harmonies that was going on.
Yeah.
And this was, like I say, it was completely new to me. But I could not believe how amazing experience it was. Incredible. You know, amazing bunch of lads from all walks of life, really interesting people we get to meet, and obviously we're very supportive, and it's sort of overcoming this barrier about what masculinity is all about, and like say, being a supportive element for each other. But on the backside of that, we've done some amazing performances.
Yeah.
And we started some songs together, and we did the bit where all the choirs get together in 2019 at the Vicky Hall.
Fantastic.
And the feedback from that was amazing. Then we went on to do the Suicide Prevention Conference at Bet365.
Oh, right.
That was really, again, really interesting. Obviously, we're doing a lot of talk about the support of choirs around mental health, and the Staffordshire Business Awards at Keele University, which was really interesting. Because I'm sure they didn't know what to expect.
Yes, yeah.
We definitely didn't know what to expect. And sort of, we just came on the stage, we gave this performance.
Was that Keele Hall, was it?
Yeah, it was the business. I'm not sure which building it was.
Oh, right, okay.
But it was one of the nice buildings.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the food was amazing. It was all the business boards. And what I can say was, when we actually did our set, the presenter of the night was Anita Rani. You know, people are not sure that was her from the lady from Country Files. But she came on stage and she was standing right next to me. And she turned round to me as she was like introducing the next people that were coming on. She just turned around and said, "That was absolutely brilliant." And obviously that made us feel that way. Well, personally, it came to me because I was right behind her, and I thought that felt absolutely wonderful.
I always think a kind of a creative outlet, whether it's drawing or painting or singing or producing a podcast or whatever, you know, it's important to have a creative outlet. And obviously when you get kind of praise like that, but I think a lot of us are guilty of trying to do that on social media. You know, we've post about how fabulous our life is, even if it isn't, in the hope that everyone will go, "Oh, you're so lucky." Mm-hmm. Oh, but that's brilliant. You know,
I mean, one thing I've tried over the years to impress on my son, especially when he got sort of past 10 years old, I've always tried to impress on him that people's social media lives are not reflective for the large part of their actual lives and what's going on.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I know people personally where if you were to look at their social media profiles, you would think they have the most marvellous, rich, cultured life ever, and that they're jetting off on holidays all the time and things like that. But the reality is very different.
Yeah.
I think nowadays it's really important to emphasise that, especially to teenagers, because obviously it's a whole raft of mental health issues you could get into.
Yeah, and the bit you see on social media is such a small part of their lives.
Yeah, of course. There's a lot of kids that think that that's what they have to aspire to. You know, that's what their actual, genuine, real life needs to be like. That's not it. That's not how it works.
Definitely.
It's an unattainable standard, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Completely unattainable.
Yeah.
Like, I find that, you know, what it's like, you'll be browsing Facebook or Instagram, Twitter, any social media platform, and you'll come across a family picture and you'll think, "Oh yeah, that looks really nice. Don't they all look like they're having a nice time? They all look like they're having fun." And I got three boys with my partner, and they are, as much as I love them, an absolute nightmare. And trying to get a perfect looking family picture is impossible. Mm-hmm. And you realistically think how much time and effort it takes to get everyone all smiling and looking in the same direction, and, you know, big grins on their face, nice body language. You never see all the effort that goes into it, and you just see the end result. And then when you see the end result, people think, "Oh, their life must be perfect."
Yeah.
It's not the case.
It's about that instant reward all the time.
Mm. Yeah.
That's what the social media companies are after. They're after your time, aren't they, all the time?
Of course.
Hits. And look, it's every time you get a ding on your phone, you're getting a dopamine hit.
Yeah.
And they know that, and it's an instant reward, so it's like getting them hits all the time, and that's not reality. It's the hard work, and then you get the reward for it.
It would be great if more of Instagram and YouTube personalities, the really big ones, would post pictures of what's involved in getting that final set of photographs out, or that final video out, how much effort goes into it, how many photographs have been deleted before they got that perfect one for that post, you know.
Kudos, I have to mention Sarah Pascoe, who I follow on Instagram. It was one of the Comedy Awards last night, and she posted a picture that just said, "Fear of missing out, at the Comedy Awards, I'd like to thank such and such," and she did this big long speech in the text, and then it's her lying on a bed with the baby on her chest, no makeup, dog lying next to her, she's just finished breastfeeding, you know. Wow. And she's like, "Look, you might see my social media, you might see everything that goes on, but this is the reality. That is just a construct, that is just a presentation, you know. I have days where I look like this, like the rest of you, you know. I have things to do around the house." I always think when they do that, and you see, particularly with celebrities, where you see their life isn't perfect and they have days where they look like a pile of shit and don't want to leave the house, you know, I think that's really important as well. I mean, you mentioned Man Up, Martin, or Up Men. I mean, that suggests kind of ideas of masculinity. Do you think there is an issue around kind of, I'll use that expression, man up, pull your socks up, you know, pull yourself together? Do you think there is a danger with men of not asking for help, not speaking out about mental health?
That's where it comes from, the man up. That's what you told as a child.
Yeah.
I mean, we're looking at some statistics here. There's about 70% of men are homeless, 96% of men are prisoners, and 76% of men commit suicide against women. The rates are much higher in men, and you look at why that is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's about conditioning, social conditioning.
Right.
And what the perception of masculinity is. If you think about, if you define masculinity, what you could define it as is, what are real men? Who are real men? Real men don't cry. Real men don't show expression, unless it's anger. You know what I mean? They show anger a lot.
Yeah.
Real men don't show empathy. Real men show strength and retaliation. Real men need to be tough. Real men cannot be like a woman. You know, all these traits are something that we're brought up to believe and are no longer really existed in this society today. Yeah. And we're trying to change that attitude of masculinity, where we need to be able to talk about things. I mean, instead of putting the walls around us and the barriers and the belief that we can do everything, because we're all DIYers, all men are DIYers.
Yeah.
You know, we grow up thinking we can do it, you know what I mean? But we can't. We're not
all DIYers. If you'd like me to come round and remove some of the plaster from your walls, then just ask me to do some DIY. I think now as well, a kind of the idea of women who are high up in business as well is very much based on the male image. So whenever you see, like in movies or whatever, you see a woman who's in charge of a corporation, she's always like a ball breaker. You know, she's always a really hard... And it's that idea that they have to be more male than male. You know, the idea that they have to be uber masculine, you know, and the only way that you could possibly succeed in business is to be ruthless. We watch things on the TV like Dragon's Den or The Apprentice. You have to say, "I'm fired." You have to be superior, or you have to say, "I'm out." There's no negotiation. There's no kind of two-way thing. It's like, I've got the power, you haven't. Therefore, I'm strong, you are weak, goodbye kind of thing. You know?
Well, I mean, that's definitely tying into the whole toxic masculinity thing, isn't it?
Because,
I mean, that's where power suits came from.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It was to convey that sort of same vibe.
Definitely. Definitely.
So women have developed, obviously, to survive in our current times. They are represented as strong, independent characters.
Yeah.
You know, they got these good jobs.
Yeah.
But man is still the stoic aggressor. And he hasn't changed. And he hasn't got them skills that the women obviously are born with as they grow up, what they play with as children.
Yeah.
I mean, I look at the stories, think of a story saying the 12-year-old boy, his mother dies, what do you say to him? You know, grow up. I remember when, I mean, this always brings it to, I mean, when Harry and the princes, when...
Diana
passed away, I watched them marching through the crowds without shedding a tear. That's not normal.
No, that's not normal.
To grow, to
it also not setting a great example for other men that you can't show emotion, you know.
No, I mean, when I was at my grandmother's bedside when she was dying of cervical cancer, and I was there with my Uncle Tony. Now, my Uncle Tony's, he was ex-military, and he was very much your atypical man's man. He was, you know, the stereotype sort of thing.
Stiff upper lip.
And it took him so much to cry, sat there at his mum's deathbed. You could visibly see him fighting,
yeah,
like tooth and nail against, yeah, just crying.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
it was heartbreaking. It made me cry more.
Yeah, yeah.
Watching him try not to cry. It's, you know, I, yeah, just wanted to, you know, slap him around the face.
Yeah,
just yeah, fucking cry.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Just
when my mum died last year, a similar thing with my dad. He would cry, but he would apologize for crying. I'm sorry, I'm crying. I'm, yeah, sorry. Why are you apologizing? You know, you've just lost, yeah, your wife of 50 years. It's a perfectly rational thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, don't apologize for that. You know, it's
weird. I was thinking about this the other day when, after me and you spoke about the podcast, and there was a period, you know, during the late 80s and the first half of the 90s, where if you watch a lot of the films and TV shows of the era, there was a lot of pushing this sensitive male character. It was almost as if we went in the right direction for a while and then did a complete 180 and went back the wrong way. It's like we're sort of back at 1970s levels of toxic masculinity, and I don't get why that happened. I was I was watching Sleepless in Seattle,
great film,
a few days ago, and I started to go through all these different films and TV shows in my head from the similar era, and I thought, well, no, they were really pushing, like, the sensitive, caring,
yeah, yeah,
man who's in touch with his emotions and, yeah, his femininity and everything.
Yeah.
And it's like there was this little pocket for a few years where, yeah, it was okay and it wasn't frowned upon, and,
yeah,
you know, women were, you
do
know,
you think that's anything to do with who's in power at the time?
Well, maybe so, but no, it is kind of, we did a 180 and went back the wrong way, it feels like. I think we're kind of just heading on the right track, and then something went horribly wrong.
So you've put on your show notes here, Mick, the, yeah, daily grind.
I mean, when you hear daily grind, you immediately think job, but it's not necessarily job related. I was talking about, it's the process of getting through a day without losing your shit, basically. You, yeah, know, there's a lot of things that take, as I said previously, when I was on about second guessing myself all the time, there's a lot of mundane things during a person's day that someone who's got ongoing mental health issues finds considerably more difficult to just navigate through the normal course of a day. And that can be simple things like loading a dishwasher, putting your clothes into wash, or extending to your own personal health and hygiene and things.
Yeah.
And again, it does extend on to your employment, your work and everything, but it's just how much more it's difficult to explain to someone how much more difficult it is getting through each day when you've got ongoing mental health issues. It's a fight. You're fighting with yourself. Yeah, I think that's the best way I can really explain it. You're in a fist fight with yourself, basically.
Yeah.
A lot, yeah, of the time, to just get simple, mundane things done.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi there, and thanks for listening to A Couple of Drips. If you like what you hear and would like to help support future episodes, then you can help by buying us a coffee. Just go to buymeacoffee.com/coupleofdrips. One-off donations or memberships are available. We really appreciate your support. Remember, please don't spend anything you can't afford. We love you just for listening. Thanks, and have a great day. buymeacoffee.com/coupleofdrips. Lee, I'm just looking at your show notes, and I'm looking at Martin, so we'll go through some of the topics. Stress container, Lee. What is that?
So, something that I learned about in the last couple of years, and maybe in the last year, became really relevant to myself. And that's just how much stress impacts you and how either negatively or positively that you can deal with it. So I think we're all in agreement here that us just being together today and having a conversation about mental health is a good thing.
Yeah.
And I think hopefully we can all agree that giving other people the opportunity to talk again is a good thing. But when you don't talk about your issues, when you don't have that opportunity to offload, you start getting bogged down with, well, in this particular case, stress. So you think to yourself that you are having a difficult time in your life, and try and think that you are carrying a backpack, and you might have a disagreement with a colleague at work, you might have a unexpected bill come through the post, you might get a flat tire, you might go to the shop and there was a particular item you really wanted to purchase and it just happens to be out of stock. You may have to give some bad news to someone, you may receive some bad news, you may not feel safe when you're walking down the street, you may be in a particularly stressful environment or a toxic environment, and all these things add to your level of stress.
Yeah.
And it gets to a certain point where you can't take it anymore. You will keep having things layered into your backpack, so you just keep getting full up. And there's no real outlet for you. You'll get to a moment in time where things will start overspilling, falling out.
Yeah.
Kind of like your stress container is breaking. If you don't have a positive outlook for your stress, then you will put yourself into a poor state of mental health. And I think it's really important for people to know that taking the opportunity to discuss whatever's going on in your life, whether it may seem relevant or not, makes a big difference to your positive mental well-being.
Yeah, that's a really good way of thinking about things.
Yeah.
Martin, your notes say the four agreements. I mean, we're moving into kind of dealing with an advice territory here and coping mechanisms, I guess we're carrying on from, but tell us about the four agreements, yeah. Martin. I know nothing about this.
It's a bit of self-help, I think, there. When I was searching out there, I came across a book by a guy called Miguel Ruiz, who wrote this book called The Four Agreements, and it's a way of sort of living your life to reduce the stress and the anxiety of the daily grind that we have to go through. Obviously, just to give you a snapshot of that, basically the four agreements are: agreement number one is don't take things personally. Agreement number two, always do your best. Agreement number three, be impeccable with your word. And agreement number four, don't make assumptions. And we do this every day, all day long.
Yeah.
And I've actually conditioned myself now not to do this.
Yeah.
And it has made my life much, much easier. When I walk into work and somebody makes a snide comment about me or a joke, I don't take it personally.
Yeah.
I don't make assumptions of why they're doing it. I'm not thinking, oh, he doesn't like me or they don't like me. I'm thinking, okay, that's what they want to do today. You know, fair enough.
I admire you for being able to do that, because I always I always take it personally. If someone makes a joke about me or whatever, you know, and it's just banter, isn't it?
It is. And like I say, it's not easy. I mean, one of the biggest examples I always bring is road rage.
Yeah.
We suffer it every single day. And do we take it personally? Of course we do. Mm. But is it personally? If that person could just put their hand up and say, I'm sorry, or, you know what I mean, I'm sorry I pulled in front of you, but no, we're enclosed in this motor car, our brains are whirling, he's just done this to
an attack on us.
And we're taking that like as a threat, and the emotions are going over and over. Now I just sit back. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's age as much as anything, to be honest, but I don't go where I'm reacting to it like I did when I was in my 20s. chasing them for miles. Flashing the headlights.
Yeah.
Banging the horn.
Yeah.
So now it's just tell myself. I mean, I'm a strong believer in self-talk. I think that is a really powerful tool.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just conditioning yourself, telling yourself, you know, that this isn't a personal scenario. You know what I mean? Everybody makes mistakes. I mean, I read something about called the paradigm shift. I don't know if you've ever come across that.
No.
And paradigm shift is it's about if you knew what was going on in their life, would you have still reacted in the same way?
Right,
so somebody might have to do something to you or react the same way, but for all you know, they could have they could be autistic, for instance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And have a quirk. A trait that would make them act in a certain way. You know what I mean? You could take that personally. You know what I mean? It's like this happens throughout life. And it's just like, I think it's just like...
It could be going through grief, or they could be going through...
Exactly. There could be anything that's going through the mind. Somebody could... I mean, if you imagine how you would react if you just found, say, for instance, something that's really shocked you or and traumatized you.
Yeah.
You know, you're in a heightened state of anxiety.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to react completely different.
Yeah.
It's icing on the cake scenario.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It doesn't take a lot for it to get a reaction. We don't know what's going on in other people's lives.
Yeah.
And I think we have to step back and think about that sometimes.
Yeah.
And like I say, using these agreements gives us time to process these situations. And that's what I tend to like. I think, personally, it's really helped me in my life.
Yeah. Which leads us on to another thing you mentioned, which was fight, flight, freeze.
Yes, I mean, interesting. Yeah, it's because, I mean, the part of the brain that protects us, the limbic system, reacts, I think it's about 5 times stronger than the frontal lobe, and it's there to protect it, and it reacts instantly. So we get this instant reaction with the fight, flight, and freeze, and that can happen with anything that your brain perceives as a threat. Now, I started to understand that I started to perceive some weird things as threats.
Yeah, emails and things, and I believe.
I mean, when I was getting thousands...
And I've certainly had this.
Loads and loads of emails, and they're asking me to do this, to do that, and I just haven't got enough time of the day to do it. The next email coming, I'm thinking, oh my God, what am I going to have to do now? What are they telling me to do now? And everything, I don't know, obviously in the world I work, everything seems to be a priority.
Yeah.
You know, and so... You know what I mean, every time I get that ding and I got this email, my body was saying it's a threat, and then the fight and flight was kicking, my anxiety was going through the roof, and I was stressing like mad at work. So I had to manage that, and obviously the way I managed that is actually get myself another job.
Well, that's fair enough. Sometimes you have to do that. I mean, I had a job a number of years ago whereby I dreaded going in every single day. You know, I dreaded. I had a boss who went from being almost a best friend to micromanaging me all the time, and I dreaded going in every day, and I just thought, you know, but I'd got a car I was paying for, and I'd got bills to pay, and I just thought, I can't quit, and then it just reached a point where I had a complete breakdown and couldn't carry on.
Yeah.
You know, and ended up taking 6 months off sick, and then, of course, inevitably leaving at the end of it, you know. But that was the best thing that ever happened to me, you know, because it made me reevaluate what do I actually want to be doing? What are my priorities? You know, I watched a great TED video recently. The chap said, you know, why do you own that BMW? Do you own it because it makes you happy, or do you own it because you like the way other people perceive you because you've got it? And if the answer is, I like it because you've got other people... See you, and you're paying $400 a month, where actually what you need is a car that probably costs you $100 a month, then you are working overly hard or working overly well to buy something to make other people perceive you in a particular way. Whereas actually what's important is how happy you are and how together you are, not how everyone else perceives you.
That ties into the whole social media personas thing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's just a regular everyday in life version of that. It's it's the same. People do it with everything, really, don't they? The clothes they wear.
Well, I had a thing where, you know, I you know, you want this, you want the big house, and you want the fancy car, and you want this, and you want that, and then you have it. It's there's this theory, I don't know if you know about the theory of commodity fetishism. It's like, if I have this thing that I have to pay for, then I will be happy. And you get that thing, and it gives you a fix for 5 minutes. And then you write, okay, that's unsatisfying now. That didn't fulfill the need that I had. So therefore, I'm going to move on to the next thing. And I think it's like me with record buying or equipment, and you know, I'm sure it's like you with audio gear and that.
But you just, you think of it this way: if someone went up to you and said, "Chris, if you give me £400 a month, I will like you more."
Yeah, that's right. What we do that's at the it. End of the day.
That,
yeah.
That is it. Now I would love to have a big shiny BMW. But there is no way that I could even contemplate parting with that kind of money each month just to get people to think, oh, wow, he's got a really nice car, therefore he must be really important. Yeah. He must be a really good person. It's just outrageous. But if you break it down to, if you exchange this amount of hours worked, which equates to this amount of money, then you can show people that you're better than them or you're on the same level as them.
Yeah,
that's what it equates to.
I've reached a point now where I don't work full-time.
Mm.
And I remember my nan saying to me, well, why don't you get a full-time job? And I remember thinking, why? I don't need more money than I need to live on and to buy a few nice things that I like, but I could work 70-hour week quite happily and earn a lot more money, but I wouldn't have time to enjoy it, and I'd be miserable and I'd be stressed and I wouldn't enjoy life. I work part-time now. I make enough to live on and enough to put a little bit aside and to buy some nice things, like if a new console comes out, I can get that, or if a new game comes out, I can get that, or if Mick sends me more records that are on offer. And of course, they're all limited editions, so we have to have them. We have to beat the other person to have them, don't we, of course?
You know that this is an audio podcast and we can't see air quotes, Chris.
Yeah, sorry. I'm doing bunny ears all over the place. I'll put a photo in the description of me doing bunny ears. But yeah, so all these things come to say, oh, if you have this, you'll be better. If you have this, you'll be happier. But I work part-time and I earn enough to pay the bills, enough to feed me, enough to go on holidays and do that. And past that, yes, I could work harder and I could earn more, but I wouldn't enjoy it, and I'd be on holiday, and I've done this before in jobs, I'd be on holiday not enjoying the holiday because I was worrying about going back to work because I was in a job that I hated, working with people who thought the only way to work was to do more hours and more hours and more hours. You know, you're getting paid for 40 hours a week, but you do 50 because you're really dedicated to the job. And I'm in on weekends and I'm in on school holidays because I'm really dedicated to the job. And you think, you're an idiot, because you can do the job in less hours, and what you're doing is you're giving your time away for free.
That's exactly right. There are people I know that do this so often.
Mm.
Part of my job is doing out-of-hours work.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm happy to do that, because I get paid for it. So it's all great. But I'll log on to fix something at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And I see one or two people logged on. I may log on at some point over the weekend, and I'll see one or two people logged on.
Yeah.
And you might catch up with them, and they go, oh, I was just finishing off an email. Oh, I was just tidying up this. I was just doing that. Why can't that wait until your next working day?
Yeah, it's not going to go away. It's still going to need fixing tomorrow.
And the more that you do, the more unpaid, unappreciated work that you do, people just assume that you're coping fine.
Yeah.
You know,
and they expect you to do it as well. He did that out of hours. He won't mind doing this. He loves the job.
That's where the unagreed expectation comes from, isn't it? Well, he's done it once. I'm sure he'll do it again and be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You won't get any credit for that. And I would say, if you're going in on the holidays and if you're answering emails at 10 o'clock at night, you're just working less efficiently, because those problems will go away. If you're answering that email at 10 o'clock at night, they're going to email you at 10 o'clock at night again, because, oh, if I email him at 10, he replies, you know. And you are, if you're giving your time away for free, you're saying you don't value your own time. It's like, I've had moments where, I think we're having an earthquake at the moment.
It sounds like
we're having an earthquake at the moment. That's actually, the mics are actually picking that up. And one of the things I'm very conscious of is being able to say no to people.
Yeah.
So if somebody says, can you do this evening? Or can you do this? And you just think, you've got to be able to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need to give a reason, other than I don't want to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting you picked up on that, Chris, because I did download one day for my team at work I think it was off the internet. It was 20 ways to say no to your boss politely.
Yeah, brilliant.
And they really appreciated it.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. I mean, it's the office space syndrome, isn't it? I don't know if you've seen Office Space, but I'm going to need you to come in on Saturday this weekend, and you know.
I think tying into that, it's important to normalise that when you're not at work and you have free time, that doesn't mean that you're available.
Yeah.
Now, absolutely. I don't have this problem with my core job. Okay. You may or may not know that I actually have three jobs, one full time and two part time, and I juggle to make sure that I can do all of the work. But then, when I do have that free time to spend it with my family, my kids, doing activities and events, when another job knows that I'm not doing anything work related, they assume that, oh, it's fine, we can ask Lee, I'm sure he'll be able to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I'm just stressing, it's not my core job. My core job's great. The ones that aren't my core job want to monopolise your time.
He's available.
Yeah, for minimal reward.
I mean, just picking up on that, Chris. I mean, one of the things that, I mean, a lot of people don't realise, I'm an introvert rather than an extrovert. And my definition...
Yeah, I know you were nervous about doing this today, weren't you?
Well,
yeah.
I mean, it's not just about the nervousness. It's more about gaining your energy.
Yeah.
An introvert gains his energy by being alone on his own.
Yes.
An extrovert gains his energy by being in the public eye.
Gotcha.
And getting that energy from everybody else. So as an introvert, for me to energize, I need time on myself. And that is also time away from my family and time away from work.
Yeah.
I love my family and I do everything for my family.
I'm the same.
But that can compromise my alone time. And I need that to energise.
I struggle at Christmas being around everyone and going to stay at my dad's. And I, you know, love my family to bits. But my sister, bless her, to be honest, has hit the nail on the head last Christmas. She said, I've given you the room at the front, the spare bedroom. She said, because I know that people get too much for you. I mean, I didn't even know my sister. We'd never had this conversation, so I was quite moved by it. But I never knew that she had recognised that people get too much for me. She said, when I have my friends over, or when the family even gets too much for you, you can go and escape. And I was very moved by that, because you have a lot of conversations about feelings and emotions with your friends, but you don't always have them with your siblings and with your family and stuff. Or you try and be strong, and you know, when you're particularly in grief and when you've lost a member of your family, and you're trying to all be strong for each other, and you're trying to prop each other up, you know, and you go in things like, to me dad, it's okay to cry, it's fine to, you know, and that. But you don't always kind of acknowledge that you've kind of spotted where each other need help. The fact that she recognised as an introvert, in order for me to recharge, I needed to escape and have that me time sometimes, you know.
I wish more people could understand that.
Yeah.
Really, when it comes to being introverted.
I think the problem is we live in an extrovert world.
Yeah.
And the expectation...
Well, the extroverts are all in the media, they're the ones that have the control and push the buttons. Yeah.
But we do all the work because we're the one at home practicing.
I mean, a big thing that frustrates me, obviously, I live by myself. I spend a lot of time alone. I go out alone. You know, I go to pubs. I'll sit in a pub by myself. I'll go to the seaside by myself. And there's this assumption that I'm lonely.
Oh,
and it drives me up the wall.
Yeah.
And it's I can assure everyone that I do not consider a single second spent in my own company wasted.
Yeah.
I'm perfectly happy by myself, you know, doing whatever. It's
years ago, before I met my partner, my dad said, oh, you know, it'd be good if you can meet someone, because it's very lonely when you're older. And I remember saying, yeah, but I've got hundreds of friends, you know, and I don't feel lonely, you know. He'd been married for God knows how many years, and so obviously the idea of them being alone was very kind of alien, but actually I never felt the kind of loneliness thing, because I'd got lots of friends. And when my granddad died, I looked at my nan, who was then alone, and that was the idea of loneliness, because they were so insular and they put everything into that relationship that when one of them is gone, there is a massive void there.
Yeah,
but I think it's important to keep your own friends and keep your own circles as well. And if you do lose a partner, you've then got other avenues to dip into to avoid that loneliness. Yeah.
I mean, as you know, this is an issue I'm going through at the moment with my mum. She's literally never ever lived by herself. She's always lived with a partner. When my dad died, like, it was an absolute nightmare because she didn't even have a bank account. None of the bills were in her name. He just took care of everything. There's this thing now where she's got to learn, like a teenager leaving home for the first time. You know, she's got to kind of learn to be by herself and accept that, you know, you don't need someone around all the time. And it's a really tough learning curve.
I think it's a big adjustment as well, that day where you first wake up and you feel like there's something worth getting out of bed for. That that can be quite a while coming. It's not an immediate adjustment, is it? You know?
No.
There are literally billions and billions of podcasts out there, so the chances of finding intelligent life amongst them are so infinitesimally small as to not even be worth looking. Could you then have stumbled onto the one podcast where intelligent life could exist? No. No, you haven't.
Well, guys, we've almost reached the end of our topic list, but one I've got written down here is, and I'm sure everyone listening will identify with this, the cost of living. Oh, have I opened up a can of worms there? Who'd like to jump in with that one?
I'll start, if that's okay, guys. Everything's so bloody expensive.
It is. Thank you very much. You're listening to A Couple of Drips.
It is.
An extra drip.
Everything is so expensive. And I don't know. I don't want to say that wages aren't keeping up with things like inflation, but when people are being hit with a £70 a month energy price rise, just on things like gas and electric alone, right? Nothing else in their life changing. We're not even talking about fuel or the cost of food. Just to keep the heat and the light on in your house becomes £60 to £70 a month more expensive overnight, right? What the hell is going on with that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not right. That is not fair at all. And you think to yourself, oh, perhaps I can find other ways to cover the cost of that. Perhaps I can maybe get another job. Perhaps I can cut back on something else. But what happens when you have cut back on everything you can do and you're already working another job and maybe even another job on top of that? How can you budget yourself out of something when there is no more budget left?
We're talking about living versus surviving.
Really, aren't we? Yeah.
A lot of people at the moment are earning survival pay.
Yeah.
They earn enough money that they are able to adequately survive, not necessarily enough money that they can adequately live, which is a major difference. I mean, controversially, I think everyone should have a holiday once a year.
Yeah.
Like, because I think getting away and going on holiday is so good for your mental health. It's so essential. I think everyone should be able to take one, and people should be able to afford one. You should be.
And not having a holiday obviously has a major impact on your mental health.
Absolutely. You're not taking this nice lengthy break from your own life. But I just wanted to touch on, you were saying before about how you sort of prioritize what you spend money on and things, Chris. Going back to, as I said before, I was raised by my grandparents. Now, when I was younger, there was always this assumption that by other people that my grandparents were incredibly wealthy, which they weren't, verging on middle class perhaps, but they weren't particularly wealthy at all. What they did do and what they kind of instilled with me is they prioritized happiness over wealth. And every penny of their money was spent on holidays and presents and nice things to make memories and make us happy. They never owned their own house, although they both easily could have afforded to if they'd have saved the money up. We never had a new car, even though the money was there that they could have bought a new car. Because the money was there for other things. We used to have three holidays a year, you know, and it wasn't because we were particularly wealthy. It was because they'd prioritised what they were going to spend their money on. You know, they wanted to make happy memories and do as much as they possibly could with the money instead of having it tied up in paying for a house or repayments on a car or anything like that. You know, it was all about doing things and being happy and having amazing Christmases and birthdays. Mm. I mean, I used to have the most incredible birthday parties and things. I was massively lucky. I was massively lucky growing up.
Yeah.
I never wanted for anything.
Yeah.
Really, I always had, I always had like the latest games consoles and things. And again, there was this assumption that I was a rich kid, that my grandparents must be massively wealthy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just what they prioritized to spend their money on.
I mean, I watched a thing recently where someone on Instagram said, you know, well, you have to prioritize investing in property because anything else after that anything else before that is frivolous. Well, it's that hard to get on the property ladder now. You could spend your whole life trying to get to that point, and you could be dead tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I think I'm not condoning kind of frivolous spending, but I'm saying, you know, enjoy your life, enjoy what you've got, because if you own your own house, the government is going to take it off you to pay for your care anyway. Whereas if you rent your house, well, they'll use the taxes you've paid all your life to pay for your care. Yeah. So, it's six of one and a half a dozen of the other, isn't it? But I think you've got to prioritise living, and if you're doing a job that you hate, working so many hours that you don't have time to enjoy it, what are you waiting for? Retirement? Well, you might get to 64 and drop down dead, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yes, everyone loves their children, wants their children to have the best possible life that they can, but you're not a martyr to your children.
Yeah.
You should not have a miserable life so that your children get a house and a load of money when you're dead. That's not a reasonable use of your life as a human being.
Yeah.
Lee? Yeah. So with what you're saying, Mick, about, you know, experiences and how planning how the money is spent, that's exactly what me and Kirsty do for our kids. Not saying that we have excessive amount of money, by no means do we at all. It's prioritizing memories and creating memories and doing things like day trips to the beach,
absolutely,
going for walks in the wood, taking them, or, you know, saving up the money so we can take them to a theme park for a day, as opposed to buying them a toy or spending money that they can literally take into a shop and buy something that they'll forget about 2 seconds later that's not going to last them. What our goal is for them to grow up and say, do you remember when Mum and Dad took us on holiday? Do you remember when we went to the beach this time and we had this experience? Do you remember when we went there for the first time? And that's what's important, because that's what they're going to remember.
Yeah.
You know, if I bought them, I don't know, I'm using a complete out there example. Let's say they all wanted a mobile phone. My kids are too young for mobile phones, but they all wanted a mobile phone. And I went out and bought them the latest iPhone, right? That would ruin me.
Yeah.
Right? And in 2 years' time, they'd want the next most expensive one.
Yeah.
Or maybe even in 12 months' time, you know. And that's that. They're not going to remember that. They're not going to remember, you know, in 2022 they had an iPhone. They're going to remember in 2022 we went to the beach and we did this, you know, really nice walk, and then we had a really nice lunch together, and then Mummy got attacked by a seagull. That's what they'll remember when they grow up.
I mean, aside from a few of the really big ones, I can barely name any Christmas presents I had as a child up until, you know, 16.
It's the memories that stay with you.
There's a handful, but I can barely remember any.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say I'm slightly opposite to you, Mick. I mean, as a child that I grew up, I really can't remember any instance where I did actually anything with my father. Strange relationship there, but we did nothing together. And I think I've gone the other way now. And with my child,
I think you have.
I do as much as I can with it, and we value every all that time. And I mean, I'd like to say holidays I find really important, holidays don't have to be expensive.
No, I
was lucky enough about I went out to buy a baby monitor about 15 years ago, and I came back with a little caravan, and we still have that little caravan. And the most the holidays,
these Aldi deals are going crazy.
They are brilliant. Don't ask me why, but and it was, to be honest, it was one of the best investments I ever made, because
I tell you what, that middle aisle's getting bigger, isn't it?
Cheap holidays. Yeah. I mean, it's getting more expensive now.
Yeah,
I must admit. Yeah. But and relatively to going abroad, which everybody goes,
it's a lovely little caravan as well. I've seen it parked on your.
The memories, and some of them have been funny, good, bad. I remember we've had illness. We've been in 100-mile-an-hour winds, but we've made lots of friends.
And
it's the community on the campsite that we go now, and it's like we've got friends that we meet up every year.
Yeah,
we all help each other out. We need the beach. We go surf. Everybody's into surfing. I get to play on a surfboard because they bring surfboards. The memories of them times are so precious.
That's what it's all about. Yeah.
It's
all
about weird. Creating. I mean, my son's 15 now, but his memories of holidays and days away and things always seem to be focused on the little cheap adventures we went on. Like, he's got very vague memories of the big holidays that we went on, but like little trips away and like day trips somewhere, they seem to be sort of really ingrained. Like, you can remember all the details about them and everything. There just seems to be something that... I think sometimes if you're away somewhere for a couple of weeks, it starts to become a bit mundane, and your brain doesn't really prioritise storing the memories away in as much detail.
Yeah, and kids do value that, you know. I mean, there's a lot of speak about, kids just want the most expensive thing, or they want this, or they want that. But actually, giving them your time is probably the most valuable thing that you can do. Yeah. You know?
It is.
Yeah. Guys, I have to say, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. Is there any other issues before we wrap up that any of you want to talk about? Anything that's popped up that in your head? I'll just chop this bit out if there isn't.
What I would like to say, Chris, is I was feeling a little bit anxious about this. It's slightly outside my comfort zone, obviously, for the first time, but thoroughly enjoyed it.
Brilliant. Well, I hope you'll come on a solo episode and talk about your songwriting and when we recorded together. It's been a pleasure. I'd like to thank all of you, Martin Davis, Michael Hayes, and Lee Smith. Thank you very much for joining me. Thank you for listening, folks. Apologise if the acoustics are slightly different to normal, but due to the fact that my studio normally being a box room, we're actually recording in the kitchen today, and I think there's been some work going on at the garage below, so there's been a few odd creaks and rumbles, but it's been an absolute pleasure having you guys here. Really good fun, and thanks for listening to A Couple of Drips, an Extra Drip mental health special. And don't forget to tune into the next one that we'll be doing, which I'm not quite sure when it will be recorded or going out, but it'll be the next episode after this, where we're having three ladies on who are mental health professionals who will be talking about their experiences of dealing with people, particularly over lockdown. So thanks a lot, guys. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for being here, and thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you again soon. Listening to A Couple of Drips. The show was conceived and presented by Chris Granger and is a Cup the Mic production.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, Chris here. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to support the production of future episodes, then subscriptions are available. Simply click on the support button in the episode description. See you next time.